You are listening to TLRStation.com.
Your Family Matters is a talk radio program with expert information about family law issues and various dispute resolution practices and other services concerning the law and how it relates to your family. Because your family matters. Host Cindy Morin is a family law lawyer with Resolve Legal Group, a family law firm dedicated to client-centered holistic legal services with offices located downtown Calgary and downtown Cochrane, Alberta. And now, here is your host, Cindy Morin.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Tenacious Living's radio talk show, Your Family Matters. My name is Cindy Morin, and I'm a family law lawyer with Resolve Legal Group, which is a family law firm dedicated to client-centered holistic legal services with offices located downtown Calgary, Alberta, and downtown Cochrane, Alberta. Your Family Matters is a program brought to you, the listener, about all matters concerning the law and how it relates to your family, because your family matters. And today's guest, we have Dr. Raksha Dave Gates from Aspire Psychology Group, and I'd like to thank you for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
So, today we're going to be talking about setting healthy boundaries in relationships. What does it mean to have a boundary within a relationship?
What I think about when I think about boundaries is really kind of a healthy space, a space in a relationship interaction between people. And many times that space really is space that allows each of us to look at what we think, feel, and what we want to do, and being respectful of that for the other person as well. So a healthy boundary really is that wonderful space where we can be ourselves as well as respect the other person as well. The way I think about boundaries, and I love the titles of an author, Anne Catherine, that has talked about boundaries, is she puts it as where you end and I begin, or where to draw the line. Those are really great ways of thinking about a boundary. So it's really that place about what is the physical, the emotional, the intellectual, our behavioral, where do we each stand?
And why is it important to set boundaries within relationships?
Well, most relationships, because we are aiming for healthy intimacy and trust and respect, to have boundaries, it allows us to have more of those really positive values in relationships. Without boundaries, often it's those very things that we want in our good relationships that get damaged. So it's really important to set those boundaries so we can have those intimate relationships, have respect, have trust.
And who sets the boundaries in our relationships?
Typically, the best way to think about boundaries is stepping into our own selves. So when we're thinking about who sets that boundary, we need to start with ourselves. So, you know, how we know ourselves best, being connected and aware of what our thoughts are, what our feelings are, what we would like to do, is a great place to start in terms of setting that boundary rather than stepping into somebody else's and telling them what they need to do or think or feel, or whether they join you in what you think, feel, or want to do. Mm-hmm. It also is the same place that you start in terms of being respectful of the other person's boundary. So who sets it? It starts with us.
So when people generally think about relationship boundaries, I think we commonly think about a relationship between two partners, but really it applies to all relationships, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
So, for example, we would probably need to have different boundaries with children and coworkers versus our intimate partner.
Absolutely. Boundaries are sort of the fundamental foundation of all relationships. So they really apply to all relationships. Typically, you know, we have varied trust and circle of relationships. So whether it's our most intimate, it might be our family, it might be our children, our partners, it might be coworkers, friends. Boundaries apply to all of them. Some of the times what ends up happening is that we're very aware of our boundaries and other people's boundaries and in our communication with, in fact, for example, with coworkers, we would typically be very conscious of those boundaries and in a very effective way respond to them, compared to we might take that for granted and actually cross boundaries with our intimate partners or our children in a way that may not be as respectful. So they apply to all relationships equally.
Yeah, I would agree. One of the things that I think of is it's actually easier to identify boundaries with coworkers, because there's policies in place, workplace policies that say this is what you can and cannot do between, you know, your relationships with your coworkers or clients and whatnot. We all have those ethical standards.
Yes.
But there is no prescribed book on what the boundary should look like with children or partners. So you would think that this stuff all kind of boils down to common sense, but clearly it doesn't if we need those kinds of policies. Why do you think that it's not just a matter of common sense with respect to setting boundaries?
Yeah. We, in our personal lives, and just as you said, that there's some of those external structures that provide those guidelines in our workplaces, legally, all of those places. But in our personal, more intimate relationships where the risk is greater, in fact, it's the very place that we worry about rejection, or we want to have love in a way that's more intimate. It's those places that end up not being so common sense. I think it's largely because we have our personal histories. You know, we're made up of our genetics and our personal experiences. And often each of us have those different learnings in our family histories around what are boundaries, or whether we're even taught that there are boundaries that were respected. And or it can be at times where we have boundaries that are asserted so strongly and rigidly that they sort of absorb our boundaries into somebody else's. So our learned experiences, where the greatest risk of rejection and love is with our intimate partners, it's the very place common sense doesn't end up happening. It's our old triggers.
Right. So if I'm meeting someone for the first time, say, or even if I've been in a relationship for a long time, how can I identify what someone else's boundaries might be?
The biggest step, and this goes for identifying those boundaries for the other people, or it also goes to maintaining ours as well as their boundaries and good communication in a healthy relationship, is the foundation is empathic listening. So when we talk about empathic listening, we're really talking about understanding the experience or the perspective of this other person. Many times in our listening, we get quite absorbed in our own experience. So our listening ends up either being just barely attentive or selective in terms of our content, or very judgmental in the sense of whether we agree or disagree with the other person. And so our responses end up being more from our perspective than theirs. So our job to really be tuned into their boundary is practicing that empathic listening, which is really being attentive, undivided attention, really listening from that very mindful place of not being judging, not having expectations or predictions about what they're talking about. Largely, it's about being in their space to really understand them deeper. Work from Dr. Stephen Covey talks a lot about that sort of seek first to understand and then to be understood.
Right.
So that really applies here.
So how can someone identify if they're in a relationship with unhealthy boundaries? What would they look for?
Well, many times, I think there are cue words. You know, when we have those boundary crossovers, whether we're falling into them or others are crossing ours, many of the cue words are things like yous. The conversation may start from the you place in terms of you are this, that, or the other, or you have done this, that, or the other. And they're often very black and white, all or nothing statements, might be always, never. Those kind of statements and cue starts to the conversation reflect that the person is very occupied in your boundary versus from their place. Now, certainly the content they may be talking about might be very valid. However, it's going to be that crossover that most people get trapped in that communication.
And so, to that end, how could I check in with myself to make sure that I'm being respectful of someone else's boundaries?
So again, when we're talking about being respectful and being able to communicate from that place, the starting place has to be from that I. So speaking from an I statement, which can be talking to the context of the event. So, you know, I think when we had that interaction, I feel I would like to do. So often in an assertive place of communication with boundaries, a good script is really, and I think, I feel, and I would like to do. What do you think? And so that begins that whole cycle again of staying in your own boundaries and shifting it back to the thoughts of the other person, which now brings back to their boundaries to be able to respond.
So just by way of contrast, could you give us kind of an example of what an unhealthy boundary might look like versus a healthy one?
Absolutely. One typical situation, and happens a lot with families, whether there are families where, you know, parents are living together or parents are separated. But when we think about boundaries, it's two parents and a child. So a typical example could be that the child either shares information with one parent or withholds information with one parent compared to the other. And we know that those, you know, suggest that there's divided loyalties between for the child between the parents. And what that does with the boundary, however, is that basically it triangulates. So we've got a child who often is unable to communicate with each party directly and is really caught up in potentially rescuing behavior in terms of what is it that the one parent might feel versus the other. Right. So that tends to be an unhealthy boundary situation and can typically happen with any third party that gets involved. So one of the concepts that I find really useful is what's called a drama triangle. It's another way to identify healthy boundaries or not and look at these examples. So think about a drama triangle. It's called a Cartman drama triangle. There's typically three roles. There's a victim, there's a persecutor, and then there's a rescuer. So if we take our example of the child and the two parents, in, for example, a separated divorce situation, the child may very well have these divided loyalties of perceiving one parent as a victim, one parent as a persecutor, and gets caught in that trap of being a rescuer. We're in a triangle, we're in a boundary crossover problem because none of them are able to step out of thinking about the other person's feelings, thoughts, or behaviors, and are trapped in that triangle in fluctuating roles. So our job is really bring it back. A healthy boundary in that circumstance would be bring it back to the dyad, bring it back to the two people that the situation is between. Therefore, the healthy boundary in those parent-child relationship would be the child being comfortable talking to each parent about what they want to share or not share and why is it.
Right.
So triangle versus the dyad.
So what would be an effective way to get a conversation started with a partner regarding healthy boundaries?
Many times we really have to take into account whether our partner is a direct communicator or an indirect communicator. So one of the challenges in those situations, it would be sort of a miss if we suggest at all times to have to raise it directly, that we're having a boundary, you know, communication issue, or that we're having challenges, we need to deal with it. If we have an indirect communicator who avoids conflict or perhaps is more tuned into the listening than the speaking, then that direct approach would be quite counterproductive. So the better approach, I think, at many times is to, if you have a situation that arises, is use that situation as your stepping stone in terms of practicing a healthy boundary. One thing we know is when all systems are connected and one part affects the other, so we don't always have to make that set in terms of what the other person needs to do. When we change our behavior or our response to a behavior, the other party has to respond and change is initiated. So a good way to start that would be if you notice there's a boundary violation or a crossover, that's the time to initiate the, I think when this happened, this is how it made me feel. This is what I would like to do in the future. And what are your thoughts about that? And that's a much more easier problem-solving place to go to.
Yeah, so it's not just enough to say to your partner, hey, you've crossed my boundary.
Yes.
You know, explain what that looks like for you.
Yes.
So that your partner can understand what's going on.
Absolutely, because when we start in that space of you've crossed my boundary, notice the first key word.
You.
You. That's our cue that not only have they crossed ours, if they've used yous, as soon as we're into the you've done this, that, or the other, here we go, we've crossed our boundaries into them. And when we're not in our own spaces, but rather in each other's, there is no space to really work on problem solving or communication. We're now in a defensive stance because the first response is going to be, hey, get out of my space.
Yeah.
So the first way to do it would be to start with the eyes.
Okay. So do our boundaries change over time?
Absolutely. I think you know, as psychologists, we really believe in change. And so we really are passionate about the fact that this is a learned skill. It can change, and it is, doesn't have to be static. It can change in the sense that we sometimes regress to our old boundaries and what we've learned before. It can change to us really practicing our new boundaries and asserting ourselves and respecting other people. So boundaries are fluid. Our job is going to be really about being aware, and very consciously so, recognizing our own patterns. So when we talk about that drama triangle, we may have a pattern of habitually being a rescuer or being that victim, and we can really work to shifting those boundaries to stepping out of those unhealthy places and practicing new ones.
Right. So I want to ask you a few practical questions that I think would be related to relationships and boundaries, if I could. Mm-hmm. One would be, is it healthy, do you think, for couples to spend all of their free time together?
In my perspective, not as healthy, in the sense that really when we think about ourselves in a healthy relationship, we're talking about two whole adults and individuals who contribute to interacting with each other and creating sort of a better whole. So when we have all of our time absorbed within each other, there isn't a lot of time or ability to really rehearse or practice who we are. What do we think? What do we feel? What do we want to do outside of that coupleship? And the risk in that place of having everybody be together and spending all their time together is the risk of codependency, which really is about absorbing your boundaries into each other,
right,
in the hope of feeling that's the most intimate place. So space is healthy in relationships.
Now, you know, just the flip of that is it just as detrimental, do you think, in terms of the relationship and understanding one another's boundaries if you spend a lot of time apart?
Yes, that generally leads to parallel lives. You know, part of this healthy balance in boundaries, and it's that, you know, pendulum swing, as we sometimes even learn about boundaries in relationships, is shifting from having no space within ourselves and apart and feeling comfortable in that and sitting with that, to having so much space that we are disconnected. We are parallel lives and not interdependent with each other or connected in a way that can be supportive. So boundaries are really about codependency on one end, where there is no boundary and one melts into the other, or there can be counterdependencies where there's a great deal and a difficulty being intimate and separate. Both ends don't allow the intimacy in a relationship. What we're looking for is that balance of both and,
right,
not either or.
So is it okay for a partner to have friends with the opposite sex?
Mm-hmm. It's certainly a possibility. I don't think anything in life is an impossibility. However, it has its challenges, largely because some of those boundaries, our job is to figure out what kind of friendship levels that we have. We certainly know that friendships have a range of levels. We have the most intimate of friends to friends that are acquaintances to friends who we may just say hello and don't know a lot about us. The friendships that we seek with somebody that is of the opposite sex sometimes requires added attention to the boundaries that we have, especially if we are in committed and partnered relationships, both friends. And some of those boundaries that are important is that, you know, what is the level of physical touch that you're going to have in terms of that physical space in that friendship? Is there emotional communication with that friend that is of the opposite sex, and does it include negative conversations about your partner? And sometimes partners can, you know, assume that that's just a friendship and you can allow it to be a venting place. However, now we've talked about that triangle, which changes everything. So inevitably you've got a rescuer, a victim, a persecutor, and we have the dangers of an emotional affair. So friendships are possible. However, the boundaries I think that are really important are those explicit conversations around touch, around time, including your partner in those conversations, including your partner in activities together. So that's a very clear boundary that you are in a coupleship.
Right. Now, I have seen in my practice some marriages that break down, but the parties are still really close after marriage. Is that crossing a boundary for exes to maintain really close relationships?
I think it's really depending on the circumstances. Certainly when you have children in your relationship and you are exes, in fact, having that important and close and positive communication relationship is essential. You need that for co-parenting. When you have partners that perhaps are exes and are maintaining that outside of contact with children, again, we're talking about the boundaries of what that looks like. Depending on if you are in other relationships or whether this contact with your ex is actually blocking you from continuing with forming other relationships.
So the classic having sex with your ex.
Yes, is likely not the best of ideas.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. So in relation to respecting boundaries, what would you say is the best approach for someone to introduce a new partner to their children after there's been a separation?
That's a great question. What I would certainly suggest is that that relationship, again, when we're talking about a parental boundary with our child versus two adults in the relationship, the needs of the child is most significant. So giving it lots of time in terms of ensuring that the child is ready for that contact versus looking at it as the boundary of when you feel like you would like to or that your partner thinks that it is important to do so. It is really important on gauging the status of your child, and especially developmentally, looking at the age of your child as well as looking at their temperament. Some children are more easily adaptable and are open to new experiences in a positive way, whereas others really shy away from that. It creates a lot of anxiety. Recognizing there's grief involved in a changing structure. So really being able to talk about that shift and a loss from your child's perspective is significantly important. Now those are some general guidelines. As a psychologist that works with adults and in parenting situations, I know that pediatric psychologists would be, you know, better suited to asking, you know, and answering some of these more detailed parts of that transition.
Right, certainly. Also, often in my practice, I see well-intentioned parents who are confiding too much with their children about the adult issues. Mm-hmm. And the courts get really upset about this when this happens. So how can a parent determine how much information is appropriate to share with their child versus crossing a relationship boundary and treating the child like a confidant instead of like their, like, yes. Children should be children.
Yes.
So
yes.
When do you cross the line between having your children just be children versus having them be your confidant, is
yes.
what I'm trying to say.
It's a significant issue, and it's great that the courts are really harsh on this, because it is a significant boundary. Children are learning boundaries. They have, this is not a skill that we know and are born with. It's something that we build and develop. And certainly in situations where we have, you know, adults who might be sharing too much information, it's a training for kids to take on sometimes emotional information or problem solving that they do not have the cognitive capacity to do. So that line between how much do you share with a child versus an adult really has to come down to being aware of the developmental stage that they're at, the age of the child, and really giving information simply in the least complicated and extensive way. So when we find ourselves becoming more, you know, using the relationship in a confiding way, usually that information becomes extensive and more detailed. With children, it's not necessary to have that level of information. So less information, age-appropriate information, clear and factual information, and really taking the guide from the child's questions as to what they need to know, rather than what's coming from the adult.
Right. So I thank you for answering all my questions today. Do you have any final thoughts that you'd like to share with our listeners about relationship boundaries?
Yes, just to end with the note that, you know, boundaries are a really fundamental way that we connect with people. And it's not a concept that we learn in school or in any book that usually puts it right out there. It's a important area to focus on because it is a place that can get muddy quite quickly. And these triangulations, we're social beings. So when we have difficulties, we pull in a third party. Right. And inevitably, that becomes triangulation. So being able to stick to the person that we are dealing with and talking from the place of how each of us think, feel, and what we'd like to do is the place of clarity and intimacy building.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
I genuinely want to thank you for being a part of our show today. If you want to find out more about Dr. Raksha Dave Gates or Aspire Psychology, how can our listeners contact you?
You can reach us at the reception number 403-984-1252. You can also check us out at the website of AspirePsychologyGroup.com. We're a group of independent psychologists, so we all have our own independent practices. However, we work together in a collaborative way under the Aspire Psychology Group. So we have a range of psychologists that work with adults, pediatric psychologists, a number of us with different specialties.
Great. You can also find out more about Dr. Raksha Dave Gates on our firm website, which is www.resolvelegalgroup.com, or by calling our office at 1-866-RESOLVE. And please be sure to tune in next week when we will be speaking with Lori Yasnick on the topic of parenting coordination.
Your Family Matters is sponsored by Resolve Legal Group, a family law firm dedicated to client-centered holistic legal services, with offices located downtown Calgary and downtown Cochrane, Alberta. The unique delivery of client-centered holistic services that Resolve Legal Group has become known for is structured to address not only a client's legal matter, but this model also ensures that families are bridged with differing community supports based on an individual's and family needs. It is the firm's philosophy that with the right supports in place, clients become empowered to make sound legal decisions when files are led to resolution. It is the firm's desire to continue to grow and expand this model so that holistic practice becomes the norm in family law rather than the exception. Contact us at 403-229-2365 or visit www.resolvelegalgroup.com for more information.